I'm just going to give a bunch of random thoughts. It's not really a sermon or anything, but things that I've learned in my many years of life. I feel old compared to some of you. I was born and raised in a Christian home, of course, and we were taught the Bible and always went to church, and I don't know, just everything was Christian. But there's still, even when you have a good godly home and good godly parents, there's still things that you have to deal with, that your parents hurt you or your brothers and sisters hurt you, and you have to, even when we're Christian, we still have a lot of pains and hurts to deal with. And so growing up as a young child, I was always very, very shy. It's probably about like Jenny. I hated talking to people. I hated being with people. I think I was the shyest of all the kids. I'm sure some of them will argue with you, but I was always in the background. My sister would go around making friends with people, and I would just stand and watch. And I don't know, as I grew older, I got to feel like nobody liked me because I didn't have any friends, and no one talked to me, and I didn't understand that if you want friends, you have to be friendly. It was just, why is everyone ignoring me? And so there were a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, and there was just things that I had to deal with as a kid, and they weren't anything that terrible. It wasn't anything that no one else struggles with, but still, when you have people hurt you, or you have especially people that you look up to causing you pain, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to take care of it? You can either pretend it's not there, or you can deal with it. And of course, I didn't understand everything that you're supposed to do, so I just pretended like it wasn't there. And somebody hurts you and you just bury it. Pretend like it didn't hurt or it didn't bother you. And so the older you get, the more you grow up, you realize that those things don't go away. They actually sit in your soul and fester. And there's coming a time where you actually have to deal with it, or you're going to collapse. And so I was probably, I won't tell you how old I am because I don't want you to know. But it was a few years ago where I felt like that actually happened to me. I just crumbled in life. I could not handle anything anymore. There was a little circumstance that caused it, which I'm not going to go into, but it was nothing that traumatic, and I don't understand. I think it was just God doing it to me because he knew that there were things that I had to deal with. And I'm sorry, I'm very random. I can't get all my stuff organized, but also growing up, I don't even know why, but I started becoming a bitter person. I was probably 13 or 14, and I was a very good kid, and I'm not breaking. I never got any spankings. I never caused any trouble. I I was just a good kid. I think everyone else can agree. But I don't know why, but I guess I realized that things in life weren't going the way I wanted it, or maybe the hurts that I was suffering, or I don't know why, I just started becoming bitter and angry. And you know, I'm not going to go into all my parents' faults, but it had probably some things to do with them. And I think I noticed when I was my early teens or late teens that people never said good things about me anymore. I was changing because I was becoming bitter and angry. And so we used to have what we called kids' meetings. It was just when we got together. I think Timothy was in charge of them. We would listen to a tape, or we would pray, or we would do random things. And so one of those nights at Timothy, to me, and Brandon's old house on 17, we were all there listening to a tape of Denny Keniston. It was called The Root of Bitterness. And I don't even remember what he said, but it was after that sermon that night that I realized I was very bitter. And I didn't know what to do about it. And I think I was crying, and Nikki was sitting with me in the chair, and one of us suggested that we have a prayer meeting. And so we prayed, but I don't know if I actually felt like anything happened. It was just the point in my life where I actually realized I was bitter, because I don't think I'd even noticed it before or even thought about it. You know, the heart is desperately wicked and deceitful, and we can be bitter and angry and selfish and all kinds of things, and we don't even know it, because if you don't stop and think about yourself and what you're doing and where you're going, and, you know, some people just always want to blame everyone else for their problems, and, you know, if you're having a bad day, it was because your sister did something mean to you or whatever, and never realizing that you have problems in your heart that you have to deal with. So it was that night that I realized that I was bitter. And I will confess, most of my bitterness was against my dad and Ben. So it was about, I think it was about 4 years ago, in September, October, where I felt like I just had a nervous breakdown. I completely crumbled. I couldn't even work. I spent most of my days crying. I would run in the bathrooms between times I was working in the bakery and just cry and cry, because I just felt like I couldn't handle life anymore. And it was during one of those days after I got home from work. I was laying on my bed, and I grabbed the book, Wild at Heart, by John Eldridge. I don't really recommend the man. I don't recommend his ministry. I have a lot of things against him. But I actually think the book is fairly good and explains a lot of things that you might not realize if you're the type of person that likes to hide everything and pretend like nothing's wrong. And so I picked up his book and I was reading, and I felt like he was writing a story about my life, about my childhood. He understood so perfectly what we go through as humans and how to deal with it. And he said in there, forgiveness is not a feeling, it is a choice. And I'd probably heard that before, I don't remember, but it stuck so hard in my mind at that moment. It's like forgiveness is not a feeling. I'm waiting for this feeling of love to come over me so I can forgive people. I mean, but forgiveness is actually a decision. You have to decide, I'm going to forgive. And also, when you're when people hurt you and you feel like nobody loves you and you just feel yucky and upset about yourself, it's always those kind of people that try to protect themselves. They don't think anyone's out there for them. They don't think anyone's out there to help them. So they have to protect themselves. You know, if somebody says something bad about you, you have to go tell them it wasn't true, or you have to go make it right. And I can't really explain what I mean, but I was one of those people. You feel like you have to protect who you are and what you're doing. And so that day when I was upstairs on my bed and I was reading John Eldridge, and there were other things in there that struck me too, but that particular sentence, that forgiveness is a choice, I put the book down and I just gave everything up. I was like, this is it. I'm going to decide to forgive my dad. I'm going to decide to forgive men. I'm going to decide. I just gave everything over to God. It was like the first time, I can't say the first time in my life, but one of the biggest times in my life where I just totally had to trust him. And it was very scary, because when you're protecting yourself and you have hedges around yourself and you feel like it's your duty to protect who you are and what you are, it's very scary to all of a sudden stop and say, Lord, you protect me. You take care of me. And it was a very new feeling, a different feeling that I ever had before in my life. It was almost like jumping out of an airplane. I remember when me and Noah and Ben and Esther and Brandon went to Thailand for the first time. I had never flown before, and I was really scared. And so I was like sitting in my seat shaking. And Noah was wandering around the plane, dashing around from window to window, saying, I wish I could jump! Wouldn't that be fun? I was like, no, not at all. But that's kind of how I felt like when you all of a sudden turn everything over to God. It's like you jumped out in midair. You have no idea if there's anything under you. You have no idea where you're going to land. And I just remember such a peace came over me that I can't describe. I remember driving downtown maybe the next day. I had such an overwhelming peace, and I was like, I just hope this doesn't ever go away. But we can't live on feelings, and God doesn't promise us. I mean, we can't expect to have that amazing peace every single day. But then I began to think about the wounds that people give you, whether it's your father or your mother or a brother or a sister or a teacher, whatever it is. And I'm not talking about just a little thing where somebody says a stupid thing about you, but something that really, really hurt. Something that really, really hurts that you can't forget about. You know, something maybe that happened when you were 5 years old and you still remember it today. I began to think of it as a cancer. You know, if you have cancer, and you don't want anyone to know about it, you can put a Band-Aid over it or cover it up somehow, pretend like it's not there. But if you don't go to the doctor and get it cut out of you, you're going to eventually die. And that's how hurts and wounds are with us when we don't deal with them. We let them sit there in our hearts. Don't deal with it. They're going to emotionally kill us. And so I began to take this verse to heart. I'd heard it all my life. But so many times when we're when we grow up in a Christian home, we hear the Bible all the time. Verses just become normal. It's just, yeah, I've heard that all my life. And there's no personal thing, there's no personal feeling for you about that verse. But after I gave everything over to God and began to pray that He would heal me and that He would take away the pain, that He would accept me and stuff, this verse actually came alive. It's Luke 4, verse 18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. All of a sudden, I start applying it to my own heart. It's like, this verse is for me. And you actually take God at His word and believe that it's for you personally instead of, well, He was talking to somebody else. And it's so easy to do it when I read the Gospels especially. I'm like, well, Jesus was talking to somebody else. It's not for us. Or it's not for me. And when you actually stop and ask Him to heal you and to accept you, then you can start applying those verses to your own heart. And this is kind of a little bit of a change of subject, but also in Luke 11:37, I'm going to read a few verses here. And as He spake, a certain Pharisee besought Him to dine with him, and He went in and sat down to meat. And when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner. And the Lord said unto him, Now do you Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness. Ye fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? And I always think of this verse when I see people, especially girls, trying to be beautiful. And they pile on the makeup or the jewelry or the clothes or whatever it is that try to make themselves beautiful, or they dye their hair or they curl their hair. And I always think, what about the inside? If you spent as much time on the inside as you did on the outside, you would be beautiful. And take the time to pray. Take the time to ask God to get rid of the selfishness, the bitterness, the anger, the pride, whatever is in your heart that you might not even realize. Instead of trying to make your face beautiful. And it's not wrong to look good. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do any of those things, but Jesus basically told the Pharisees, hey, clean the inside first. The outside will take care of itself. You know, they wanted to look good for men. They wanted to everything to be perfect, so nobody could find anything against them, but they didn't realize that their heart was full of wickedness and evil. And the same, I mean, I hope none of us, our hearts are full of anything terrible, but still, we can allow bitterness to creep in. We can allow selfishness and anger. We can be mad at somebody and be unable to forgive them for a long time. And instead of dealing with that, we just kind of let it go and say, well, you know, it's the other person's fault. If they weren't so obnoxious, I could forgive them. And if I didn't have to put up with them every day, I would have an easier life. And so many, and it's seriously, it's very sad, but some people are just like this. Like everything that ever happens in life is somebody else's fault. And they never realize to actually take care of their own. And real beauty comes from within. I think everybody knows that. Me and Mary had the privilege to go out to Boston a couple years ago to a food show. pretend we had the time of our lives. But it's just a natural food show where everybody comes and displays their products, and then you as a owner of a store or buyer can go there and decide what you want to buy for your store. And so we were walking down the hundreds of thousands of different people, and all of a sudden some woman says, "Hey, girls, come here." She's like, "Try some of this. It will make you beautiful." And I can't really describe the woman in a nice way because she looked horrible. She was doused in makeup and had a weird hat on and probably painted fingernails, and she kind of looked like a witch. And I was thinking, if that's beautiful, I don't want it, your stuff. But I think the world has a very warped idea of what beautiful is. And they don't realize that it's actually within. It's the heart. It's a heart free from pain and sorrow. It's a heart that's forgiven. A heart that trusts God instead of trying to give in to other people. You feel like you have to be acceptable to the world, or you have to be acceptable to your family, and so you have to do all these things that you don't really want to do, but you have to do it anyway because that's just how you get accepted. And it's actually almost annoying to me to think that people have to do things to be accepted and they don't want to. It's like, who are you? What are you trying to be? Why do you have to get the approval of somebody else? Why can't you just be yourself? I think, I don't know if you ever thought about it, but what's the saddest thing in the whole Bible? Every time I think about it, I think of this. It's Luke 13. And I have the wrong reference, so I have no idea where I was supposed to go. Okay, it's 23, 24. I'll start reading beforehand. Verse 13, "And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and rulers and people, said unto them, Ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people, and behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof ye accuse him. Nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For of necessity must release one unto them at the feast. And they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas, who for a certain sedition made in the city and for murder was cast into prison. Pilate therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. And he said unto them the third time, Why? What evil hath he done? I found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. Three times he tried to release him, and he was the judge or the priest or something. He had authority. Three times he begged them, no, he hasn't done anything wrong. I'm not going to. But it says, the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. He could not give in because of the people. And I hate to read this every time. It's so sad. It's like you almost made it. But he gave in to the people because he was willing to do what they wanted instead of what was right. And he lost his own soul over it. Many of us have decisions to make too. And how do we make our decisions? Do we go by what the people want or by what's right? And I have two other random thoughts. I really don't know how to fit them in here, so I'm just going to throw them at you. After I felt like I had given up everything to God, before that I was like, I was almost angry at people because they didn't like me. They didn't love me, and I wanted attention. I wanted people to be with me. I wanted people to love me, and I felt like they didn't, and I was upset about it. And after I realized to trust God, and it's like one of the hardest things in my life that I ever realized is that wherever you go and whenever, whoever you are, people are going to fail you. I don't care how much you trust somebody, they're going to fail you at one time in life. And it was a horrifying thought because I was like trusting in people. I was like waiting for people to help me, waiting for people to heal me, waiting for people to take care of me, and it wasn't happening. And I realized, you know, you could wait till you die and no one will ever help you because people are selfish. And, you know, maybe it shouldn't be that way, but it is. We have to look to God for our help. We have to look to God for our healing. I'm not saying that nobody else can ever help you, but you can't rely on them. You can't rely on people's comments or their thoughts or their... Maybe someone writes you a letter and you get really excited that day and you're encouraged to go on, and then you feel like you die again after it's been a week or so and no one's noticed you and no one's looked at you and no one's given you any encouragement. And I can't remember exactly what the verse says, but basically Jesus said, abide in me. You have to be connected to him. And I always think of the difference between a river and a mountain stream. A river is connected to some lake or ocean or whatever, and it never runs dry. It's constantly flowing. But a mountain stream only runs when there's snow or water or rain. If there's no snow to melt, if there's no rain, then it will dry up. And so when we... look to men for our identity or whatever, we're just like a mountain stream. If people are nice to us and care about us and say good things about us, we're going to run for a little bit until we have no more encouragement, and then we're going to dry up. But if we're connected to Jesus, connected to, we'll be like a river that it doesn't ever run dry because he's always there and he doesn't ever fail, even though we think he does sometimes. And there's one last comment that I don't know if it has anything to do with what I've been talking about or not, but I've thought about a little bit and I just want to talk about it. It's when the children of Israel were on, I don't know, I should have looked up the verse, but I didn't, but when God spoke the Ten Commandments to them, He was going to come down in the mount, the burning mount, and they were supposed to stand far away from the mount. They weren't supposed to touch it, and no animal was supposed to touch it or anything. And they were going to hear his voice. And, you know, it happened one time, and they were like, Moses, don't ever let this happen again. We can't deal with it. We're going to die. You let God talk to you, and you come and tell us. And sometimes, even today, it's a scary thing to be in the presence of God. You feel like he's big and powerful, and he's doesn't want to deal with you, and he's, you know, you're too sinful. And so in my own life, I don't know about you guys, but in my own life, I started letting other things take the place of God. I would listen to music or read a very light spiritual book. And I didn't even understand what was happening until one night when a few of us were at our prayer meeting, and we were just talking about music and stuff and different things, and I think I just kind of decided, you know, I'm going to give it up. I mean, I used to listen to the Christian radio and song request time and stuff, and not that there's anything ever wrong with doing it, but it was just more of a part of my life that I should have let. And all of a sudden, after I gave it all up, I realized that I was letting this music and frivolous books that were supposedly Christian actually take the place of God. You think it's drawing you to God, but it's actually taking you away from God. Instead of making you face him, just you and him, you think, well, I'm going to have the music on, and that will, it's a worship time, and so I'm going to draw close to God through my music. But I actually think it does the opposite. And you might argue with me, but I don't care. I'm going to tell you anyway. It's actually taking your time that you could spend with God and just facing him and dealing with personal, you and him, you know, what's wrong. What do I need to change in? And I'm not saying that all music is wrong either, but I realized in my own life, you know, this is actually replacing God. It's not drawing me to him. And so, I basically gave it up, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect. I still feel like I have a mountain of ways to go, and sometimes I feel like I'm farther behind than anyone else, and I'm should be the farthest ahead because I'm older than everyone else. But I feel like that was a disaster. But anyway, I'm going to close with a song.